One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
Here we are. The Midweek Drive continues ever onwards as Tier 3 has been a resounding success and continues to be, apart, of course, from those folk in London who apparently are actually in Tier 2. Unbelievable. So let's go straight to actually locating one of the fine folk who actually are in London. It's Anna Lewis. How are you, Anna?
Yeah, not too bad, but it's serious lockdown, I'm afraid.
Serious.
I went to Oxford Street a couple of days ago and it's unrecognisably quiet.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's okay. And as Yaz has actually turned her video on, I'm going to turn my video on as well. Say, hi, Yaz. It's a sort of netiquette from that point of view. I'm going to welcome you to the production. Welcome, Yaz. Good to connect with you as ever. How do you feel about the news?
Yes.
As somebody from Bermuda who's actually sort of doing your studies at the University of Lincoln, Are you delighted that Lincoln's gone into that highest level ever of Tier 3 lockdown, or is it just a case of whatever?
You know, it's a case of both, you know. I don't go out enough to really be bothered by it that much, you know. I just stay in my four walls right here.
That makes sense. Now, is that a Jamaican flag you've got? Sorry, a Bermudan flag. Well, I'm saying Jamaica. Is that a Bermudan flag that's in the background there? I recognize obviously the Union Jack that's actually there, but I was thinking, have you combined both there?
Yeah, this is our flag right behind me. That's my Bermuda flag.
That is the official Bermudan flag, exactly. You know, I could always rely on your good self, Yaz, to actually bring in a bit of patriotism on the whole thing. Because, I mean, I always felt like I should stand up and salute, which is great. We've also been joined by our ace horse racing commentator. He's back with a vengeance. And like academics, basically, COVID lockdown, it means nothing when you're a horse racing commentator, does it, Malcolm?
Hello!
Exactly. Nothing at all. Let's just, for the benefit of the folk who are actually saying, what is this Midweek Drive thing? We have got the traditional launch with Anna Lewis in London, all set and lined up. And she's turned her camera on as well, which is very brave, Anna, but that's great. That's good to see. We've got Keith Tainton, legendary, awesome soul, who actually once, I believe, Malcolm, assisted you with various web material for the delights of the Top Draw Theatre Company, if memory serves.
He certainly did. I remember it very well. He was a godsend, and I often wish Keith lived next door so I could get him to come around and sort out all my technical problems. Yeah.
Hello, Malcolm. Nice to hear from you again.
And you, Keith. And you.
In fact, it's fair to say that many people have actually said that surely if the current government wished to actually sort of get some positive energy back, they should actually arrange for Keith to live next door to everybody, basically. You know, we all need Keith who's next door to us. You know, so cloning Keith, that should be important. I'm going to hand over to you initially, Keith, because we've kind of covered the range here. Anna's just said that Oxford Street is unrecognisable. Well, that's what Christmas decorations does, you know, clearly. But she's in serious lockdown in London. And obviously, I mean, Anna, if we were students back in the day, well, as we were, of course, how do you think we would have coped? I mean, no internet, no web, postal service was fairly irregular. We'd all be queuing outside the red telephone box outside to actually make calls, which, of course, we couldn't do because it would be a COVID central problem. What sort of things would we have actually been doing?
I don't really know. It's hard to put the clock back or to try and envisage how we with hindsight, it's hard, isn't it?
I think we're
so used to the technology being there that to envisage a time when we couldn't do simple things like make a Skype call or whatever just seems alien to us now.
Well, I mean, I've said in the past, my experiences with Skype have been very negative. I feel it's all part of Bill Gates's attempt to actually take over the world. And the fact that he's dropped to number 3 in the richest list in America is you know, just by the by, basically. Obviously, Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos have taken over the whole system. Keith, you're at the University of Derby these days. For Yaz's benefit, and Anna's, and Malcolm's as well from that point of view, what sort of things are you doing? Because obviously you're in the IT department there, and clearly from that point of view, you don't need an office, you should work off campus because the students need the teaching space. How has it been this semester before, of course, we let the students go home to actually celebrate some form of, well, holiday?
Like you say, I can do my job from home, and in some ways it's been really good because I don't have to trot round to people's offices to stare over their shoulder while they try and use their computers. They just share their screen with me now, so it's much more efficient, and I get to sit on my sofa all day, so it's really nice, yeah.
See, big thumbs up from Keith Tainton there, sitting on his sofa. Malcolm, you don't sit on the sofa because, again, like myself, you've been travelling around the country. I mean, I just got to confirm, presumably you're also in Tier 3 now in Yorkshire, as pretty much the entire north of England has been put into Tier 3. Or have you escaped? Are you in Tier 2?
No, we're definitely in Tier 3, Alex. Yeah, I heard it on the radio about 5 o'clock, because we're very close to Hull. We're only about 10, 12 miles north of Hull, and that is definitely a Tier 3. And I checked, and East Riding of Yorkshire is definitely Tier 3 as well. So I think we're all in the same boat.
So, well, apart from London, of course, you know, Tier 2 apparently.
Well, apart from
what the hey? Because obviously it's a different line.
And Cornwall is Tier 1, apparently.
Yeah, well, you know, don't get me started on tin miners, otherwise you'll have Sarah Huntley sort of start phoning up and it'll just be a whole new world entirely. Malcolm, is this going to impact your work as a horse racing commentator? Because, I mean, we're already hearing that attendees for sporting events will probably be allowed in a socially distanced manner. Is it just a case of, well, as long as you fulfil the criteria, you will carry on business as usual?
Yeah, in actual fact, it won't affect me, Alex. I've actually been back commentating since early June, where this horse racing was one of the first sports to come back behind closed doors. Obviously, it plays havoc with the carpets, doesn't it? So we've actually been working since early June. And as you say, they have just announced that crowds can come back. And I know that a lot of race meetings are hoping that they'll be able to get crowds in as early as next Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on which tier they're in. And, you know, it sounds like most of them are going to be in Tier 3, in which case they're not going to be allowed any crowds at all,
no.
As far as I'm aware.
And the slight flaw in the Boris Johnson argument with, of course, his two best friends, Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance. Don't you just love them? Wouldn't we like to have them on either side of the crib for Christmas? I don't know. Maybe not. obviously, our thoughts go out to Tweedledee and Tweedledum, otherwise known as Cummings and Kane, who obviously left Downing Street because they just couldn't agree in the end. But at least we can guarantee that Lady Nutnuts is still there, otherwise known, of course, as Boris's fiancé. I was going northern there for a moment, Keith and Malcolm. Fiance. Yes, I mean, we're obviously sharing a range of things here. You are very much experiencing this. You know, what better way to come to Britain as a citizen of Bermuda to really experience the British spirit at its best? What are your thoughts? I mean, you know, I know I asked you this beforehand, and I know you were the last person to actually see me in person physically at the University of Lincoln. Yes, guys, Yaz was the only one of the entire tutorial group who dared to come in for a face-to-face session. But
bravo!
So Yaz, what are your kind of thoughts on this? I mean, as we head to that, because presumably, again, you'll be staying in Lincoln, you won't be heading back to Bermuda, otherwise it could be a nightmare in all sorts of ways.
Yeah, I won't be going back home. But, you know, my flatmates, very, very heartwarming. They're actually out right now to get some food, and they're making Thanksgiving for, and we're going to have it tomorrow. So I thought,
oh, sweet.
Such generous of them.
Yeah. I mean, back in the day, you know, the notion of actually British souls actually celebrating Thanksgiving, I mean, Anna, it would never have happened, would it, really?
No, it's a shame, really, because I've got an American friend who misses that dreadfully. I think it's the idea of family being together and celebrating together is different this year.
Just simply, actually, the day in which the Pilgrim Fathers effectively said to the Native Americans, "Oi, get off our land." Or was that effect? I know that's a drastic thought, but at the end of the day, there are lots of Native Americans who would have said nothing to thank our sort of Lord for, but what the hey. Malcolm, who would you like to quiz about life, the universe, everything? Anna is a wonderful scholar when it comes to the joys of artifacts and historians. She loves checking out graveyards, very apt for this particular climate. Keith, of course, you know so much about, but haven't really connected with Keith for literally over a decade. And it wasn't anything that Keith said. Don't worry, I'm sure we'll work on that basis. And Yaz, as you're well aware now, is one of our fine undergraduate students reading The Joys of Communications and Public Relations at the University of Lincoln, where it has to be said, Malcolm, I'll just wrap up with this, I did actually quote your incomparable, unbeatable Seagar in an online session I delivered today in terms of advanced voice production techniques. Thank you.
Well done, Alex. I'm glad you're still cribbing my material. That's what
It's homage. That's the key thing. Anyway, over to you, sir.
I'm going to have a word with Yaz first because I've not come across Yaz. And Yaz, so what are you going to do with your degree when you eventually leave this fine establishment of Lincoln?
I am going to see if I can travel, to be honest. But I don't think I'm going to go back home anytime soon. So,
travel in a professional capacity? You mean work your way around the world?
Yes.
Whoa.
Because out of pocket isn't going to do it.
And what do you hope to be working as with your communications degree?
I'm not sure. I'm quite flexible at the moment. I'm kind of into crisis management. That's why I can't wait to get into next year and to see what that is going to be like. But whatever lies at me, I'm good.
No, it's not religious, Malcolm. It's crisis management. Christ management is a different line entirely, and it's not a degree in theology. You know, just a minor point there. Okay. What the hey?
Okay, now that's a relief. Yeah, I wasn't quite sure where the conversation was going. Crisis management. Now that sounds interesting. Yeah. So what about Anna? I was looking up people I thought I might be talking to on the internet just before I came on, and I had you down as a jewelry designer or a news editor for Delish.com, but obviously you're neither. So what do you do, Anna?
And nothing at the moment, nothing that would make sense. I'm looking for work, and I've done a bit of research into family history and particularly graveyards. It sounds pretty grim, but It's one of my passions. I could spend days in graveyards looking at monuments and looking at inscriptions and getting carried away.
You must have done Highgate Cemetery quite a few times, have you?
Highgate's very, very interesting, but I'm finding that the local ones are just as interesting since lockdown. We have a plague pit in Isleworth with about 176 people in it. And I'm trying to name them all. It's a bit of a tricky one because it was 1663.
So it's nothing to do with COVID then?
No. I wish, it makes you think though, doesn't it? When you think of all the pandemics and illnesses of cholera, typhoid and the rest that have happened, it does make you realise that history does repeat itself kind of sad kind of way.
Absolutely. Gosh, that would have been related to the plague in London, would it, that plague pit?
Yes, well the one in Isleworth is quite a well-known one that covers this kind of area, and what they've done is they plopped a yew tree to mark the spot and they put a plaque there saying in memory of the plague victims, but I suspect they were very local. I mean, Isleworth's a bit of a dead end really. It's a bit of a non-place, if you know what I mean. It's not
a nice pub.
Well, it's all right. I mean, it's a nice
pub on the river.
There is that. Well, that's near where the plague pit is. London Apprentice. It's literally 2 minutes away from the pub. Not that there's any connection.
Because let's face it, if you've got a plague pit, you've got to have something to actually go afterwards. So go to the pub, after you've had a few burials. You know, it's great. As Keith will attest to, when we were making our way down to Lincoln from the great migration at the turn of the 21st century from Humberside and Hull, leaving the plague-ridden sort of Hull behind to Lincoln. I think it's fair to say, Keith, we both thought that actually Lincoln would make an ideal location for a plague pit. But then they built a university. Well, it used to be toxic waste, but it's okay. Don't worry, Yaz. The toxic waste, I think, has actually become a little bit milder, and folk aren't necessarily sort of hugely sort of concerned now. So students glowing in the dark is not the challenge it used to be a few years ago. So all's good.
Thank God.
That's very true. I'm fascinated by this Bermudan flag in the background there, Yaz. I mean, do you understand anything about heraldry and so on? I mean, obviously we know about the Union Jack, etc. However long that stays, I don't know. It'll probably just become we'll lose Scotland before too long, no doubt. So, you know, we'll just sort of take our way to that. But what can you say about this Bermudan flag? And this works so well on radio, it's quite unbelievable. Off you go.
Well, with the crest, you have like this... this kind of dragon creature, and I don't know if you can see, but within the crest is another crest, right. And it's actually a shipwreck. And so
nice. The
shipwreck is the discovery of Bermuda, because they got shipped on the wreck.
They got shipped on the wreck. You see, this is just using English as a whole world, really. And I think I'll use that as the next quote. I'll forget incomparable, unbeatable Seagar and actually say they got shipped on the wreck. You know, that's the end of the play. Yeah,
get your own material, Alex.
Listen, I can send you the entire video. It's all there. You know, even an insert from Jason Connery is actually there. But what the hey? You know, it's all part and parcel of the whole thing. Keith, what sort of questions have you got for the team?
Well, actually, Yaz, you're talking about the shipwreck there in obviously Bermuda, the triangle. What's that all about? What's the connections? Are we linking the dots here, or?
So those are the very two different shipwrecks.
All right.
One, I guess the people made it, so present me existing. But the other ones, you know, they entered into like the center of the triangle.
Yeah.
And so that one's that's iffy. I don't think I'll go there.
Is that a thing? Do you think that's a thing then, the Bermuda Triangle? Is it a bit scary there, or?
I think even if you catch an airplane, the airplanes don't go in it. They like go around it.
Really?
If I want to go like, what's straight under the Caribbean? If I want to go to the Caribbean, I would have to go take a flight to Miami or to New York and then Miami and then all the way around.
No way.
Just to get down there instead of going straight through, because it's not it.
So is there like regular reports of fishermen getting lost and stuff in the, or does nobody go in it, or what's that all about?
I don't think people go in it, but really? My reasoning for it is very like scientifical in a way.
Oh, yeah.
But other people are like, yeah, it's aliens. And I'm like, you know, it could be. Your answer is just as good as mine.
That's cool. So do you think there's like some sort of secret base there with a supervillain in a volcano in the middle? Is that what's going on, do you think?
No, some people do think of it. And, you know, government these days, you just never know.
You do not. That's it, isn't it?
I should point out to our CIA listeners that Keith Tainton was indeed singularly convinced at the start of the century that there were weather controlling mechanisms that were actually responsible for changing the weather, if memory serves. But that's by the by.
Yeah. Out of the Bermuda Triangle, obviously.
Yeah. I blame the time you spent as an exchange student over in America, Keith. I mean, you came back a completely different person. It was very, very strange, but what the heck?
Yeah, it doesn't it?
Malcolm, have you ever headed off to Bermuda? Is it a place that you'd kind of consider heading off to, or is it a case of, well, maybe not?
Yeah, I'd love to go to Bermuda. I went to Jamaica a couple of years ago with the Starlet daughter. She paid, and that was great. But lovely neck of the woods. I mean, yeah, why not?
But bottom line, if your daughter's Eleanor Tomlinson, then clearly she can pay for all the family holidays. It's an understandable
exactly.
thing, you know. As we said, parents are very difficult to bring into the world. That's the important thing. Maybe one day we'll actually sort of bring her onto one of these Zoomers, because let's face it, we're all over the place these days. Anna,
it's
what about
time.
You? Sorry, what was that?
Sorry, I said high time. High time you got
high
on.
Time. High time, high five, indeed. Hi-fi. Anna, any questions you'd like to put to either Keith Tainton, Malcolm Tomlinson, or Yaz? Obviously, Anna, you have this privilege because actually, you and me, we go back to the very, very, very early days in a broom cupboard in Dulwich in South London, where we used to travel there in a non-socially distanced number 37 bus to actually produce some radio magic to actually help people give birth, and various other sort of things. Yeah. Over to you, Anna.
Those days were, oh my goodness, when you think about how long ago this was, it gets scary.
Wow. Yaz wasn't even born. You know, let's face it, Yaz was not even born. And Keith might have been just an infant. Malcolm, of course, has been around because he's been around for quite some time, which is fine.
Indeed.
Exactly. But he didn't join the team until the end of the 90s. So in comparative terms, for broadcasting on the Midweek Drive, a relative newbie. Yeah. Over to you, Anna.
Yes, I was going to ask Yaz if she knows much about, is it Tucker Point in Bermuda?
Yeah, Tucker's Town.
Because I've done some family history research there for the Tucker family, and it just springs to mind. And actually, my friend's brother, whose name is James Dodgson, is Bermuda's weatherman. He's the man you see on your news doing the weather.
Small world.
You're lucky. The weather there looks beautiful. I mean, I know you have dodgy times with hurricanes and stuff, but yeah, when you see a blue sky, there's nothing that cuts it like that. It's just gorgeous weather. But no, it's a small world.
You now understand, Yaz, why it was essential you joined us on this Zoomer, simply so we could actually give you a weather forecast for Bermuda from lockdown central London. Take that, BBC Radio, and your ways forward. Fascinating. I mean, again, in terms of that, obviously, the whole notion of hurricanes you raised there, Hannah. I mean, yes, have you ever experienced a hurricane? Because, I mean, I'm not sure whether that kind of trade-off, insofar as we like mostly blue skies, but we'll take a few hurricanes just in case.
Well, I slept through the one of 1987. I actually slept through it, the big one. I woke up in the morning to find a tree literally across the drive of the flat I was renting. So it was quite a scary thing all in all, but I didn't hear a thing.
Yeah. Well, neither did Michael Fish. That was part of the reason why it was there. I'm referring here, Yaz, to a very historic event, which you can look up on YouTube and so on. The hurricane that was predicted for Britain, but then not predicted. And Michael Fish said, nothing to worry about at all. Great embarrassment, but still. John Ketley would have a lot to answer for that as well, because he's also on Siren Radio these days. Who'd have thought, one of Michael Fisher's friends on Siren Radio? I know, it's astounding. But Yaz, hurricanes. Have you actually adopted the Anna Lewis approach to the hurricane and simply say, I'll just sleep through it?
You know, hurricane, I guess you can, it's like similar to like snow weather out here. Like it just becomes like second nature in that sense, you know? So I think actually before I came here, we had two hurricanes back to back. And one of my friends called me and they were like, what you doing? Are you getting ready to pack? I was like, yeah, we're just chilling in the hurricane. And they were like, huh? And I was like, yeah, it is what it is. A little monopoly here and there.
Keith, you can tell this is the new generation of communication student now. You know, back in your day, there are folk I could actually mention who, if they actually were faced with, yeah, we're just going to do some chilling in the hurricane, you know, you would have thought, what?
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel as though actually the next generation is well served with these folk, etc. Malcolm, what are your thoughts? I mean, hurricanes, do you chase them at all?
Can't say I've ever chased a hurricane. No. And then the 1987 hurricane, of course, I was just going down to the pension office to get my pension. So I was aware of it. I was actually working in Ipswich, actually, for Eastern Angles Theatre Company. And wow. I think we got the tail end of it over there. Yeah. I think you got it worst in London.
Yeah. And of course, trees would collapse regularly. Malcolm obviously was just having a little jest there. He wasn't collecting his pension, of course, in those days, because you know he still had at least, a number of years to go. Anyway, so it goes. Let's just briefly go back to sort of education. So, I mean, Malcolm, overall, what are your thoughts on how the government is actually handling this? Because there's already a narrative that's going through which suggests that actually the line about good news, miracle cure found, and so on and so forth, that, you know, the classic, and I'll use a sporting analogy here, of people saying, you don't know what you're doing, is being sort of raised. I mean, they haven't actually started saying to Boris, you're not fit to wear the shirt, but I'm sure it's a matter of time. What are your thoughts, Malcolm, in terms of how Britain, or at least England, is actually coping in these strange times?
Well, to be really honest with you, Alex, it's such a difficult conundrum that it's been. I mean, I would have I would have challenged anyone to have got it absolutely bang on right, because, you know, we've all been sort of groping in the dark, haven't we, including politicians and indeed Mr. Whitty and his friend. You know, we've all been groping a little bit to find a reasonable path through it. I think, you know, when we look back at it in 3 or 4 years' time, that's the time to analyse it and say, what could we have done differently? What could we have done better? You know, I think there's been some good things. I think the Chancellor's come out of it quite well. I think, you know, trying to protect people's jobs and, you know, keep the economy going. But obviously on the other side of it, you know, you've got people, and there's going to be a massive wave of unemployment next year. I think personally, that's probably been unavoidable. You know, I think they're doing as well as they can. To be honest, I don't think party politics has got a place in this COVID epidemic at all. I think people will use it as a tool to beat the government, maybe a tool to beat the opposition as well. I don't know, because that's the nature of people. They will do that. But I don't think the COVID crisis should be linked to politics at all. I think we've all just got to find a way through it together.
Well, again, interesting that Private Eye this week have obviously carried themselves very favourably by apparently quoting the Health Secretary with the line, "We're ready to screw up vaccine rollout," says Hancock. So that's nice to actually see. Coupled with, of course, government scientists revealing that they've discovered the mechanism by which the money allocated to fighting COVID was spread so rapidly throughout Britain, apparently all due to being friends of the Prime Minister. But that's by the by. Anna, that was a very, very sensible sitting on the fence line from Malcolm Tomlinson. As somebody who has basically been in lockdown now for about, what, 6-7 months now, virtually, or more or less from that point of view, what are your thoughts on the whole sort of system? Do you think it's great? Is it a case of yay? Or
Well, I used to work for ICI, and now AstraZeneca and Oxford are trying to put the vaccine together. But we all know that it's not an overnight thing. I mean, there's no way that there's any guarantees, even though they say that the Pfizer one will give you 95% chance of getting over it or whatever. It's all very hypothetical, and I think it's a bit of a morale booster in a way, because you need that, don't you? Because everyone's feeling so rubbish at the moment.
As they rightly said, you know, depending on what sort of level of vaccine dose you've actually had, it might be 50% effective, it might be 95% effective. It really depends, really. It's a random choice. Stuff if you're in the 5%, but what the hey? As UB40 once said, they were the 1 in 10. A level aligned from that perspective. Yes, your thoughts? Do you think that, you know, where do you sit on the whole thing? I mean, Anna, obviously, as an ex-pharmaceutical soul, basically, now interested in graveyards and tombstones, etc. I know, go figure. Would you like to add anything? I mean, do you feel comfortable, or do you think as soon as actually I quit this country, the better?
You know, I just don't think I'm going to take any vaccine anytime soon.
Whoa. Wow.
Yeah, I think if I've been safe this far, I can keep on going a little bit further on.
Interesting line there. Of course, let's not confuse anti-vaxxers with anti-faxers. Easily mistaken. One is actually a machine that's usually gone out of business by now through the fax system that's there. Vax, of course, is a different line entirely. I just put that for a communications problem. Keith, what about yourself?
Well, I've had corona, so don't bother me.
So... Shit, you can't just drop that bombshell upon us, Keith. I mean, were you tested? Were you isolated? How were the family?
I was one of the first wave in March, early March. We all had it here, my wife, my son, and it's been really boring ever since because, yeah.
Well, if you will insist on actually being one of the early victims of coronavirus.
Early doctor, right?
I mean, clearly, I mean, the fact that you're a midweek drive person means that you have a certain amount of immunity. Only kidding. But in terms of that, Keith, there is the suggestion, of course, that antibodies don't last forever. So, I mean, will you be sort of getting vaccinated, et cetera? Or is it a case of, no, we're just waiting until I can have my certificate to prove that before I can actually set foot ever again within the University of Derby, I've got a certificate which actually says, I am pure?
I don't know anything about that. I'm not sure. I have to wait and see.
Malcolm, are you still sort of saying we're doing the best we can, or are there other more radical thoughts? I mean, just talk us through what you go through as a commentator, because presumably do you have to sterilise your equipment before and after using the whole thing in the horse racing commentator? I guess not, Keith, you know? I mean, as Yaz would actually say, what's the word I finish every session with? Ends with an S. Ends in an E. Sterilise. Sterilise. Oh, yeah. Sterilise imperfections. Yeah. As you can tell, once again, one of my tutor sessions has actually gone down extremely well in terms of instant remembering there. I don't care. Malcolm, do you sterilise or sanitise?
Well, in actual fact, we've all been issued with our own personal headsets and microphones, which we take to every individual commentary box with us. All the equipment in the commentary box is wiped down by the technicians who set things up before we actually get there. So basically we just swan in, plug our headsets into the desk, which is in every commentary box, in every racetrack, in every country, and in every town. And then they're away from there. And then we obviously unplug, take it away with us. And we do get tested. We don't get tested. In June, we got tested every time we went to the races. Now it's just temperature checks and answering questions about, we had to do a COVID awareness course online, and we have to answer questions about whether we've had symptoms and that sort of thing. I wasn't quite sure how they were going to approach it with letting crowds back in, whether we would still be having to do that sort of fairly stringent sort of entrance policy, and if they would do that with the crowd members as well, or if they will suddenly relax it and we'll just all be waved straight in all of a sudden. I don't know what's going to happen with that. But at the moment, we have to have a temperature check, answer questions on the way in, and we have equipment which is personal to us that we take with us.
Interesting times indeed. Malcolm, before you actually leave us and before we all sort of head off into the wild blue, yonder, I was going to say, but we're not going to Bermuda, at least not that I'm aware of, unless, of course, we're astral travelling, which is, of course, the next venture for the Midweek Drive. We just think about going someplace and we will be there, like Jonathan Livingston Seagull. By the way, Yaz, did you manage to access Jonathan Livingston Seagull, or is that still sort of waiting to be accessed?
Still waiting to be accessed.
No. Two days, I said, you know, read this book, it'll help in all sorts of ways, explain psychology of community engagement. Malcolm, would you like to do one of your awesomely talented and amazingly wonderful wrap-up sequences with Keith Tainton, Anna Lewis and Yasmin de Graaf in full force, possibly including yourself and the flag of Bermuda? I think it's over to you, sir. Take it away, please.
Inside the final two furlongs and making stealthy progress, Keith Tainton on the outside of Alex Levchuk, who's back paddling at a rapid rate of knots. Here comes Anna Lewis on the outside. And here's Yaz right over the top with the flag of Bermuda to win on the line.
That's the quality that Zoom can actually bring to the world. Absolutely outstanding. Anna, I think as CD Cooper said, I'll leave you to ask the last two questions. Have they had a reasonably interesting chat, and will they come back? Over to you, Anna.
Have you all had a reasonably interesting chat this evening?
Loved it.
Yes.
Always.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yes, I didn't get any major celebrities for you tonight, but I figured at the end of the day, you know, keeping it real, keeping it honest, keeping it with real people might be useful as a I mean, you know, sometimes we can have too many pretenders in the whole system, you know?
I am more than happy with the company I've kept tonight. Thank you, Alex.
Very good. So the next critical question, Anna, is...
Will you be coming back anytime soon?
Absolutely.
Of course. Good luck.
Well, there we are. It's thumbs up. Anna Lewis, Yaz de Graaf, Keith Tainton and Malcolm Thompson. Huge thanks. We're off now to actually deal... What are we dealing with? Oh, I don't know. Another whole series of interviews on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio. Keep on keeping on. Bye for now.
Bye.
So, Thanksgiving. Wonderful, if you're American. But of course, as far as the British Isles are concerned, and the majority of the world, let's say, it's the holiday season in which we'll be celebrating Christmas in an interesting way this year, certainly. But nevertheless, still these questions of what makes the ideal Christmas meal there. What are the sort of essential ingredients that are actually around? Well, who better to actually talk about the ideal version of the traditional Christmas dinner than the founder of the award-winning Temper in London, vegan restaurant, Simplicity Burger, of course, a whole range of other things. He's quite frankly one of BBC Good Food's finest. He's Neil Rankin. How are you, Neil?
Yeah, I'm great. How are you doing?
Very good indeed. So, Neil, let's go straight to the nub of this whole issue. Is it turkey? Or is it a case of, no, turkey is actually so 20th century, we're in the 21st century, and just as the current president of the United States has pardoned a turkey, we should also give our turkeys pardons as well?
I don't know. I think we need some normality this year, don't we? So I'm a beef or turkey person, but I think I'm turkey this year. I think that's the way I'm going. If not just for the leftovers the next day, I think are just so much better than anything else. You know, right. Your next day curry and pies and things like that. I think turkey just does it better for me that way.
And of course, there's always the classic turkey sandwiches that without which Boxing Day would probably be just that little bit less fulfilling, really.
Yeah, I think sometimes late night turkey sandwiches are a thing as well. I think, you know, with some of the leftover sprouts and Yorkshire puddings.
I mean, this is all great stuff in terms of ensuring waste not want not, knowing, ensuring that things don't go to waste from that point of view. But this particular research in terms of actually cooking the traditional Christmas dinner, what are the kind of key things? Because inevitably it's something which every year there seem to be panic stories about people saying, oh, I should have put it in beforehand. There are people probably listening to this at this very moment, Neil, who said, have you put the sprouts in yet? There are weeks to go. But, you know, is that the sort of situation we're looking for in terms of ensuring that it's like a well-planned military operation, getting everything sorted for the perfect Christmas meal?
I think so. I mean, you think you've got 26% of people, I think, are now planning on cooking Christmas dinner for the first time now. And a lot of people are thinking it's stressful. My biggest tip is just to try and cook ahead and to try and make it simple for yourself. You know, the best crispy potatoes you can get is if you cook it the day before and you let it cool in the fridge, you'll get a really nice effect. Same with meat, no matter what it is. If you actually pre-roast it the night before and then put it in a hot oven the next day, it's actually better. It stays juicier, stays moist. So I remember Christmases with my mum and family cooking from like 5 a.m. till 1 o'clock and kids moaning about opening presents and things like that. And it just didn't seem like a good vibe. And I think, you know, especially if it's your first time, especially if you're a little bit nervous, it's just cook ahead a little bit and just organize it and keep it simple. You know, there's no rules and regulations you need to stick to for Christmas. I think there's a lot of people, I think 47% are now making an untraditional main for Christmas lunch, curries and the like. So, you know, have a bit of fun with it, stick some spices in it, have a bit of a play with it, and just, you know, have fun.
I mean, I was going to say, actually, Neil, I mean, I can almost hear the phrase now that's probably going to be uttered up and down the land when these sort of stress factors are rising. You know, the line will be, who do you think I am? Neil Rankin? So share with us your own sort of tales. I mean, have there ever been moments where you felt, you know, a little bit more anxious than normal? I mean, when you were, if you can cast your mind back to that first Christmas preparation, or is it a case of, no, it's always been ice cold? That's the key thing. That's the approach.
I think I probably started cooking professionally before I started doing many Christmas dinners at home. I think we used to, when I was a chef, we used to get some ready meals. Not ready meals, but those sort of turkey crowns that you have, and cook it off, because I'd be actually working on Christmas Eve and maybe Christmas dinner morning. So, I mean, I always kind of made it a little bit simpler. I go all out there now, but it tends to be smaller Christmases now. It tends to be a big tub of Asheran or something like that I sink into. Whereas I think working with Aldi this time, I've been coming up with all these sort of Christmas things and seeing some of the sort of convenience stuff they have, and I think it's fine to sort of mix and match that sort of stuff. You know, cook a nice bird if you want and take your time over that, and then you can, you know, get some of these sort of ready-made potatoes and things like that and chuck them in last minute if you're short for time. But it's just taking the stress out of it, I think, is the most important thing.
And we spoke at the top of the piece about, obviously, the importance of choice and so on. I mean, are there any kind of really out there, blue sky thinking approaches to untraditional Christmas meals that are likely to sort of open up? Because I suppose at one stage, you know, even the notion of a turkey at Christmas was viewed as quite bizarre and unusual. I mean, it's a relatively recent transition. I suppose it goes back a few hundred years, but no longer than that.
I think it changed. I mean, Christmas to me is about spicing, and always has been. And I think people tend to stick to a very bland ideal that it's salt and pepper, and that's it on Christmas. We've put in the Aldi promotion, we've done a Sprouts with Szechuan pepper. And if anything needs Szechuan pepper, it's Sprouts in my mind. Not my favorite vegetable by far, but you know, add some chili in there. Get some. We've got some cumin roasted carrots on the menu as well, and you know, just go to the spice aisle, go to the herbs and things like that, and just give it a little bit of a kick. I mean, there's no reason why sort of you can't curry a few things or add a bit of chili to something. It's anything goes really nicely with. Whether you're not you're a vegan, you're having a nut roast, or whether or not you're having a turkey or beef or whatever you're having, most spices and flavors go with these sort of things. So you know, mix it up, have a bit of fun.
And of course, there is always the classic line that with respect to Sprouts, they are great for flatulence. If you wish to add a bit of flatulence humor into the actual sequence as well. So
yeah. Exactly. Well, you know, that adds a little of entertainment in the late night, anyway.
Yeah, it's a thought. So, Neil, what are your top tips ultimately with this Aldi package, which you would suggest for festive feast first timers? A bit of alliteration there. I mean, is it a case of it's all in the preparation and, as you said earlier, prepare beforehand?
I think prep before. My key tip, I think, for roast potatoes is to pre-cook them. So pre-boil, nice salted water, rough them up a little bit, and then cool them down in the fridge, leave them to get cold, leave them to get dry. And when something's dry, it crispies up really nicely. When something's wet, the heat has to fight against the moisture first before it can get crispy. So the drier, the better. Yorkshire puddings, difficult, not traditional necessarily, but now pretty much a staple. If you're struggling to cook them, if you've got quite a lot of them to make, do a big one. It's easier, you know, because you want to get that pan really hot, the oil really hot, super hot oven, nothing else in the oven, pour in your batter, and then just sort of cross your fingers and hope. But the bigger one you're doing, the less time you're opening the oven, the better. So the bigger, the better. In that case.
Well, there you go. I mean, who would have thought giant Yorkshire puddings being recommended? It could be a whole new experience for the whole system. Aldi.co.uk would presumably be the best place to go to find out further information.
Aldi.co.uk is good. Their Instagram, Aldi UK, is where a lot of the information will be. And mine, Frontline Chef, as well, will be launching all the recipes and all the updates and everything like that. So Instagram nowadays, I think that's your best location.
Yeah, and I suppose there is that other line with technology that people often use their particular portable devices to actually have a YouTube following and advice from people who might be sort of relatives and so on. I mean, what's your take on that technology in the kitchen? I mean, are we heading towards getting a virtual Neil Rankin popping up as a sort of standard way of saying, put your Sprouts in now?
Well, it kind of happens at work now as well. I think all the chefs now, I think we tried for a few years to try and get them not to have their phones on them. That didn't work. So now we utilize it. I think we text each other different things and stuff during the day. And I think the same for Christmas. I usually get a little phone call of my mum or something like that she's got some sort of problem. But yeah, I think that's possibly the future.
Well, fantastic. Well, Neil, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with your good self. Of course, have a fantastic seasonal break, your good self. Keep on keeping on, and happy holidays.
Yeah, you too. Have a great time.
A few years ago, if you'd mentioned Black Friday, you probably would have thought, oh, it's some peculiar sort of socialist or surreal experience of life, or maybe a horror movie or something. Maybe it is still a horror movie, but the fact of the matter is, clearly it's not just the day after Thanksgiving that's impacted on the world when it comes to Black Friday. So in order to actually ensure that if you are going hunting for bargains and so on this fine event, then maybe you need some top tips, and who better to actually provide us with some incisive and very worthwhile comment in terms of tips for Black Friday than Britain's very own coupon kid. It's Jordan Cox. How are you, Jordan?
I'm very well. How are you?
Fantastic. So, I mean, Jordan, how did you get the name Coupon Kid for the first time? I mean, it sounds, you know, vaguely Wild Westy, really.
Like a Sundance Kid, yeah. So I started couponing when I was 15. And it was literally just printing out coupons from online, using my mobile phone apps to save money in the supermarket. And yeah, the moniker sort of came from there. I started doing it because my parents split and we needed to find a way to save money. And I ended up enjoying it so much, I kept doing it week after week. And I ended up saving, gosh, about £100 in the first month. I got my Christmas dinner for 10p that year. And then I got a massive £600 shop for just 4p with coupons after that. So the name has stuck and I'll probably be the Coupon Kid and into my 70s.
Well, exactly. It could have been a lot worse. Think of the Milky Bar Kid. You're too young to remember the Milky Bar Kid, but use YouTube or whatever. Yeah. So share with us, Jordan, in terms of this whole system vis-a-vis ensuring you get the best deals, because often I think we hear tales and we've run stories about how people can be confused, they can be bamboozled, they can actually be suckered into what apparently are deals but are anything but deals and so on. What sort of things should folk be looking out for?
So you're absolutely right. Black Friday is basically a day where retailers can flog off their stock for cheap. And it's really important to do your research before you buy absolutely anything, because some retailers do just plug in the Black Friday banner on their website and claim that everything is a deal when in fact it's not really. So before you buy anything on Black Friday, one of my top tips is just to do a quick Google search before you buy. Don't automatically assume that the first place you go to is going to be the cheapest, because quite often it's not. And if you just do a quick Google search and look on Google Shopping for whatever item you're looking for, it will usually tell you where it's cheapest and you can just click on it and go straight to it. But on Black Friday, prices are going to change quite frequently and quite rapidly. So you do need to keep a tab on things to make sure that things are going down and not up.
There is, of course, that line that we constantly get updates from various online sites saying, oh, I'll only viable for another 2 minutes, another 3 minutes, another hour, etc. Does that kind of sense of panic, a bit like when you're doing an eBay auction and you see it counting down, you think, oh, should I actually put in my bid now? Does that also impact on us psychologically?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Amazon do lightning deals where they only have like 15 minutes on each one, which probably entices you to buy. But it's really important just to remain calm, have a list of the stuff that you actually want to buy, and then only go for those things. Don't be spending money on stuff that might seem like a good deal, but you don't actually need and you won't actually use. And before you buy anything online as well, probably one of my best tips is to go on to Top Cashback, where you can get cash back on anything you buy on top of deals as well. So there are ways to save even more than what the deals actually show you.
Of course, I believe Cyber Monday follows Black Friday. I mean, can we look forward to, it says in essence, Black Friday being the start of the whole sales season, because doubtless this will continue well into 2021.
Well, this year is a very, very different one. And Black Friday this year is mostly going to be online. So Black Friday will basically be Cyber Monday. And a lot of retailers' sales have been starting. They've been ongoing for at least a week now, and they will be going through until the middle of or even early December. So I don't think Cyber Monday will be as much of a thing as it has been in recent years, just because everything is online this year. So it's probably going to be the same price from Black Friday through to Cyber Monday, and then things start to go up. So there's probably not as much of an urgency this year.
A minimum amount that people consider to be a bargain on average is a discount of just under 30%, with a quarter of shoppers saying that's their particular line. Is again, that's something where people will actually say, a bit like saying, we'll price it at $9.99 or $4.99, etc. They say 30% discount, that's what's going to be the tipping point in terms of people being attracted to the bargain.
Absolutely. This was research by Top Cashback, and apparently 42% of shoppers are more reliant on Black Friday sales this year than previous years. So it's going to be an interesting one to see what the kind of sales figures are this year, because obviously people are tighter with money this year from what's been happening. And so are the retailers as well. They want people to spend. So it's going to be an interesting year.
And in terms of tactics and strategies and so on, I mean, I'm conscious that certainly in the real world, in flesh world, there's often sort of tales of people going almost coming to blows with other human beings over fighting for the bargain, etc. Can you see a situation where we'll have virtual avatars fighting it out and slugging it out in cyberspace?
Well, in previous years, there have been like online queue systems at some of the really popular retailers. So if there is something that's very cheap, you may be waiting in an online queue, waiting to get onto the website to actually buy it. Whether there'll be virtual punches thrown, I'm not too sure, but hopefully not.
Well, indeed, sir. I mean, we have to sort of maintain a certain level of civility and so on. Topcashback.co.uk, presumably, Jordan, the best place to go to find out further info from both yourself and indeed ways to make savings.
Absolutely. So if you're buying anything on Black Friday, make sure you do visit Top Cashback just to get that extra bit more off. Usually you get between sort of 5 to 10% back on what you're spending. So if you're spending hundreds on a TV, then it could add up. And just do some Google searches for some of the best deals on Black Friday if you're looking for them.
And I mean, presumably you might well say I have ideas, but I'm not going to give them away. Are there any things that you've got your eye on in terms of will you be engaging, or is it a case of no, I've already done that, thank you very much, I'll just step away from that hole now and and let other people do the battling?
Well, it is a thing about sort of not spending money when you don't really need to. So I do try and set myself a list and only stick to those things. Maybe if Santa's nice, I might get a new games console this year, but we'll have to wait and see.
That makes perfect sense, really. Mind you, I'm still sort of impressed by that £600 shop with only a 4p. That shows true strategy at work, Jordan. Fantastic. It's been great speaking to you, good self, today. Keep on keeping on. Have a splendid holiday season. And hopefully we'll speak in 2021.
Perfect. Thanks so much. Speak to you soon.
LinkedIn is one of those wonderful applications which has continued to grow in popularity, and certainly it's a wonderful way of actually keeping connected and obviously changing your work or indeed seeking new work. It does seem as though, certainly according to recent research from LinkedIn, that one of the aspects of the pandemic that really ties into the department of we're all in this together has been the way in which people are actually ready to talk about whether or not they're gainfully employed or waiting for the phone to ring or indeed between jobs or other aspects. In other words, the stigma of redundancy. It does seem as though attitudes are gradually changing. And to address this and talk through some of the findings of this LinkedIn survey, we're delighted to welcome from LinkedIn the wonderful Emily Spavin. How are you, Emily?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Very good. Now, in terms of this particular finding, 68% of UK workers now agree there's less stigma to being made redundant. I mean, it's always been one of those questionable things that nobody likes the R word. It's a dreadful thing to actually use. But maybe actually we are coming around to the notion that, well, actually, these things do happen.
Yeah, of course. And I think this year especially, so many people have been impacted in this way. People that obviously never dreamed that this would happen to them. People from all different age groups, walks of life, industries. So yeah, it's a really widespread problem that's plaguing so many people at the moment. But it's great to see that there's been something of a shift in mindset. So we've seen more and more people, more of our members on LinkedIn, turn into the platform to share their experiences and ask for support and find new opportunities.
It was really interesting to find that a third of folk admitted they've previously lied about being out of work. And actually, even more significantly, 1 in 10 have hidden the news from their family due to embarrassment. Again, that can only end in challenges. I mean, you're going to have tears, you're going to have stresses, you're going to have additional things. And that would make, presumably, getting another job even more challenging.
Yeah, that was a really sad part of the research, I thought. But the research has also shown that those who are out of work now are 3 times more likely to ask for help from their network of friends, family, former colleagues than those who experienced redundancy prior to the pandemic. So it seems things are changing and people aren't feeling that sense of embarrassment that used to be maybe the norm. And of the posts that I've seen on the platform of people reaching out for help, the responses that they've had have been really heartening to see and been really useful to these people. So I've seen examples of recruiters reaching out with potential roles. Career coaches have been offering their services for free. So offering to look over people's CVs or give them tips on how to perform in a Zoom interview for a job. Others saying, oh, I'll put in a good word with my employer. And then just hundreds and hundreds of other messages of people offering support and encouragement, which I think, people really need at this time.
This is one of the crucial factors about this. I mean, you're head of UK news at LinkedIn, and we're also talking about paid work here because I can appreciate people saying, well, I might be out of paid work, but I'm still actually working, doing all sorts of other bits and pieces. It's worthwhile noting that stigma is worth being challenged. I mean, looking again at some of the findings here, over a quarter used to judge or look down on people out of work. 23% thought they were lazy before being made redundant themselves. I mean, these are the kind of things that actually... the there has been maybe actually produced by the mass media and forms within that, the sense that, well, if you're out of work, you must obviously be a lazy good-for-nothing so-and-so, and therefore you shouldn't sort of really be engaging in society. And I think we are having to address that, as indeed the Chancellor, Mr. Sunak, has obviously acknowledged.
Yeah, so we heard from him yesterday that 1.62 million people are now unemployed in the UK. It's just an incredible number. And as I said before, you know, it's people from all industries, all walks of life, all ages. It's not something that necessarily happens to other people. You know, all sorts of people are being impacted by this. And so it's great to see that people are now being more open and honest about their own situations, and that other people are getting involved and trying to help them get back on their feet and find the next position.
We've spent an awful lot of time in recent weeks talking about the challenges being faced by the hospitality industry, and I think that's one of the sectors that potentially could have huge numbers actually entering the job market and so on. What advice would you give to people working in that industry, or indeed anybody who's just found themselves suddenly made redundant?
Yeah, it's such a difficult one. And obviously, certain industries have been been more greatly impacted than others. I guess the main bit of advice for everyone is just don't give up. I know it's a really tough time at the moment. There are jobs out there. So just keep applying, keep banging on the door. It could be that some people do need to broaden their horizons and look to different industries or different types of role, maybe spend some time learning some new skills. So it could be an opportunity to move to a new industry and find a new job that you actually love more than the one that you were in previously.
It's certainly a case of having to look at developing your profile, your CVs, etc. Got to admit, Emily, I'm as guilty as everybody else in this particular side of things. I do have a LinkedIn account, but fundamentally, apart from writing endorsements of other people's work, etc., I keep it literally bare minimum. I haven't even got a photograph up for that point of view. But
you'll have to sort that out.
I knew you'd criticize me on that one, Emily, but what the heck. In terms of general sort of finding out advice, where would you point listeners? Would it be to the LinkedIn website, or are there other places you'd recommend?
Yeah, so the LinkedIn.com in general, you'll find lots of conversation from your own network. So you might be able to find some help from people that you've maybe previously worked with. But also if you go to opportunity.linkedin.com, then there's lots of advice specifically for people who are job seeking at the moment.
And have you ever had the experience yourself, Emily, of suddenly finding yourself seeking work, etc.? Or is it a case of, no, I am Emily Spavin, I'm obviously irreplaceable?
Well, I don't think it's fair to say that you're not irreplaceable in those circumstances. So, yeah, I have been in a situation before where I've been out of work, and it's not a great feeling to have. I definitely empathise with that. So yeah, I reiterate my advice. So just try and keep your head up, keep your chin up, and keep banging on those doors.
Absolutely, and focus on the positives from that point of view. Emily, we've got two final questions. We put them down as our customer satisfaction ones, really. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Say that again, sorry?
Have you had a reasonably interesting or satisfactory Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Yes, I have, yeah.
This is good. So can we look forward to connecting with you again in the not-too-distant future? Will you return?
Yes, I would, yeah.